I've been building a rockery, so I'll have to talk about that.
Oh, me, strap in. I'm not sure I'm ready for that level of excitement.
It was big news for me, man. I was so pleased with it.
I think I just found the opening segment for the episode.
Top 5 Face-Off contains adult themes and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
He's Matt Hurst.
He's Matt Squirrel.
This is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world rankings of everything. What are we ranking today, Hurst?
Well, Squirrel, today we're going to be ranking the top 5 Meatloaf songs.
That's coming right up after this.
If there's more than one, then there's a best and a worst. If there's more than 5, call Squirrel and Hurst. It's the Top 5 Face-Off. Actual facts. It's the Top 5.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, rankers. Welcome back. Or if this is your first time, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Squirrel, for all our shiny new rankers, why don't you tell them what we do here and, of course, why we do it.
Hello, shiny new rankers. I'm sure you're almost sparkling. Why do we do this? This is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world rankings of everything. Every single episode, our Patreons will choose some subjects for us to rank, and we pick one at random, and then we choose the top 5 things and the worst thing in that category. Today's category, of course, Meatloaf songs. And then you, the ranker listening at home or in your car, or maybe they're playing this out live in Wembley Stadium. Hey, you never know. You go to our website, top5faceoff.co.uk, and you vote for the winner.
Is one of us always right?
Yeah, one of us is always correct, Hurst, yeah. Oh,
that's excellently convenient for the rankers.
It is.
Cool. But we don't like to get straight onto things, so what's been going on? Should I go for an easier one? How's the weather?
It's still hot, Hurst. It's
hot, been hot as balls.
Yeah. Now, we got some feedback on our last episode, which was, before you started ranking, it was boring as shit. So that's my wife. Thank you, honey. Be okay. More entertaining this time, Hurst.
Okay, I mean, we were ultra hot last time. Not in the, we're so cool way, definitely in the, our brains were melting and therefore we couldn't do it. But I'm happy to skip past the dull preamble. Squirrel has just told me off air that people are not going to be interested in the fact that I built a rock garden. So we'll gloss
what are you
over
on about?
That.
I told you the exact opposite. And not only that, I fucking recorded it. I can just prove that right now.
Oh, fuck me, strap in. I'm not sure I'm ready for that level of excitement.
But you used sarcasm to indicate that that was not interesting.
So what? I want to hear about your rockery.
Well, interestingly, and I use that term really broadly, it's a sweeping, inaccurate use of the word, rockery stones are really expensive.
All right.
So if you try and buy them from like B&Q or whatever, they'll send you a bunch of, I don't know, less than bowling ball sized stones for like 200 quid or 250 quid. Or if you want to buy one of those big monolith type stones, which is actually only about 60 centimeters tall, not massive at all, maybe a bit more, but definitely not Stonehenge material, they'll charge you like 250 quid just for that. I was like, well, balls to that.
You what?
I know. They're really expensive if you want to buy stones for the garden. However, if you go on Facebook Marketplace or other equivalent things, I don't know what they might be, but that's the one I've used, and you write rockery stones, people are trying to get rid of that shit. So there's a guy in Doncaster who I have acquired an awful lot of large stones for. Obviously, I had to go and pick them up. And the entire rockery so far has only cost me 30 quid because I've picked up free ones from places. I've picked up some 2 or 3 pounds of stone for the really big ones. And I've got an awful lot there. So I have been frugal as all shit in building my rockery. And it's starting to look good. So I'm well pleased with that. And whilst we're on the gardening thing, people who are eagle-eyed and have been keeping up with our Facebook page will see that I have, in fact, repotted Lemony Snicket.
Ooh, I haven't seen this. I'm looking
due
now.
To an ant's nest in the pot.
There he is.
It wasn't looking super happy, so I thought, well, I'll upgrade the pot. And as I just dug in a little bit, ants came pouring out. I was like, you little shitbags.
Oh, man, how are they getting there? Why would they want to live in there? It's got like
everywhere
a
garden. Yeah, but it's Lemony Snicket. It's prestige, isn't it? It's like living in Mayfair.
Oh, damn. The address. Right.
Yeah. So anyway, I took them out, shook all the ants out, washed the roots off and put it in a new pot, nice pot, mixed up a really good compost and coconut husk mix and put in some fertilizer. God damn, Lemony looks well happy, growing like a boss in a minute.
He does. So. I'm looking at the photo. He looks vibrant.
Yeah. Radiant, sir.
Ooh. Oh. So what do you reckon? Next year for lemons?
Maybe. I'm hoping so. I'm going to have to leave him out over winter this year because he's just getting too big for the house. So it's going to have to be some kind of greenhouse or something going on. So
right.
It's big time in the garden right now. Big time.
Fuck all going on in my garden apart from yellow grass.
Yeah, I've got a lot of yellow grass. Funnily enough, I get quite excitable on Shine or Shen or Sheen or whatever you want to call it because they sell loads of gardening bits.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And you never know how good or bad they're going to be. But generally speaking, they've actually been pretty good. So I bought a series of little spritzing irrigation systems that I've set up so they, when I plug the hose in, it just starts watering bits of the garden.
Wait,
with
you're
spray.
Not allowed to use your hose.
I bought a sprinkler and that arrived and it's like one of those ones that goes tuk, 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 tuk,
yep.
and spins around and just waters a massive area. I thought it's just going to be banging. And the day it arrived, I got a text message from Ankley and Water saying, hose pipe ban starts tomorrow. It's like, you bastards. So now I have to water using watering cans, which takes more water than using the hose does.
But the idea, I guess, is that most people can't be asked to do that. So
that's probably what the idea is.
Yes. See, that's been gripping my shit, Hurst, because I am also hosepipe banned. Not that I really use a hosepipe for much, but fuck you, Anglian Water. Or, well, I have Anglian Water. I don't know who you are.
Yeah, I have Anglian. Well, I have two. I've got Anglian and Severn Trent.
How's that work? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, Severn Trent do the waste, apparently. I was hoping it was the other way around because they're not on a hype ban, but yeah. Anglian give us the good water, Severn and Trent take away the bad water. Oh, that's boring. That's not good chat. Tell me about why you're so pissed off.
The fact that they know it's going to be fucking hot. Everyone knew this was coming. The fact that they can't provide enough water for everybody is because they shit away all their money giving it to rich bastards who worked, to be fair, really hard for their parents' money. Oh, mate, it makes me so fucking... Now, you're going to have to fucking deal with some shit because we couldn't be bothered to fix our stuff properly and make it good. And by the way, we're going to fine you a grand.
God, screw those guys, man.
Welcome to Top 5 Face Off, the number one socialist podcast.
I don't think it'd be making you feel old.
No?
Yeah, I'm sure something was making me feel old, but then I didn't write it down, so...
So you forgot because you're old. I'm old. Fucking perfect. Speaking of not remembering things, you want to find out what happened in the last episode? Do you remember what we talked about?
Movie villain schemes.
Yes, correct. Schemingly in first with the first comment was Meg98 with a vote for you, Hurst, who says, Tidy. Love Seven or Seven, and she's written an S-E with the seven in the middle, E-N, like it was in the cinema.
I like to pronounce that, Seven.
Well, that's exactly what she says next. How are we meant to say that? Sevenen. Sevenen. Thanks, mate. Money slinger votes for me.
Ooh.
He says, Skrull is 100% right on Thanos. Lamest scheme possible. Zemo had a much better MCU plan.
Okay, it was not a lame scheme. Whether you liked it or not, it was the grandest scheme of all the movie villain schemes. It was his logic may or may not have been flawed. Let's face it, most of them are flawed. But as grand movie villain schemes go, it was epic and brilliantly executed.
Well, Moneyslinger disagrees with you and goes on to say, there's another reason why Zemo has the better villain scheme. The impact of his plan is deeper. Well,
is it though? Is it deeper than wiping out half of all life?
Hurst sounds a bit miserable. So gets a sympathy vote this week, says Anonymous. Aww.
Maybe again it was hot. My hot voice is same as my miserable voice, perhaps.
Maybe. But I'll tell you what's made me miserable. That's not why you vote. This is an important historical archive of the best things. And the best things aren't because her sounded a little bit sad.
Yeah, I mean, I almost called out Moneyslinger because he said, Squirrel's right, Thanos sucks, which is, again, the worst doesn't count. But because it was my best, first, I thought, I'll be wrong if I say that. But yeah, you're right. People, come on. It's important we get this right.
Here comes a vote for me. Boy, did you guys sound warm. Not fucking wrong. Davpaz here. Apologies for not voting, commenting on the Fast and Furious episode, but my crushing indifference on the subject caused choice paralysis. And it was too bloody hot. As for schemes, I've gone for Skrull, as I always enjoyed Simon Gruber's plan in Die Hard 3. Fun fact, none of the first Die Hards were written as Die Hard movies and were all adapted from other works. The first one was off to Frank Sinatra, as it's technically a sequel to The Detective, which he has starred back in 1968. Can't wait for some meatloaf. Dav Paz out.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Dav Paz. Informative, and you voted for the right person. Ooh, Ohio. Ohio here. Who watches The Watchmen? Me. I love that movie. Any votes for me? Thanks, Ohio.
Hmm.
The season of Hearst continues. Cheers, Kovach. Yes. Thanks, Kovach. Ooh, this is a long one. Oh, God, I'm just and smash into my microphone and strap in for this comment. Just a few more weeks of the season of Hearst to go, and then I can finally get back to voting normally. That said, any list featuring Lex Luthor is always going to score points from me because, as most people know, I'm a big Superman fan. He's not that big, is he? About average height. Oh, it's the season of Hearst. Who do you think he is?
Oh, right, Vision, yeah. Well, because Cobb said season of Hearst as well. So
so it needs
sort of really spread a little bit now.
Yeah.
But yeah, is he? I mean, he might be a big Superman. He might be a fan of the big Superman.
Oh, right, yeah. The biggest of the Supermen.
What's his name who did it recently?
Cavill?
That's the guy. Mm. He's quite a unit,
he's a
isn't
chunk,
he?
Isn't he? Yeah.
He's the big Superman. And Christopher Reeve was 6'4".
He was. Anyway, I got a lot more comment to read. In fact, my parents were apparently going to call me Lex before changing their mind at the last minute and settling on The Vision. Or Ross, depending on how you know me. Still, I do use Lex on video game high score tables, so that's my rather tenuous connection. An even more tenuous link would be squeezing another Haley Fox story in here.
Yay. Oh, yes. Come on, let's hear it.
Apart from watching Doc Tanyan at her house, the only other thing I remember is watching an episode of Mighty Mouse. Unfortunately, I can't remember who the evil villain was or what their evil scheme involved. So it's a bit of a crap story. Anyway, shame on you for not mentioning Dick Dastardly. Well, movies, The Vision, movies.
Previously, we have discussed how Dick Dastardly was my worst villain.
Yes, go right back to the very first episode if you want to hear more about Dick Dastardly. The most evil scheme of all, he just wanted to win a race or catch a pigeon. Love The Vision. Thanks, The Vision.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Mm.
And one more, Hearst. Are you using the Neuralizer from Men in Black to wipe your listeners' memories? I can't remember significant details about the last couple of episodes, or indeed voting in them. Fair play if you're using it to get people to listen to the podcast twice, but if they're forgetting to vote too, that might explain the lack of comments on the previous video. Video? And that's from Anonymous. There we are.
Goodness. We weren't the only ones with heat brain, were we?
Well, yeah, it looks that way.
We haven't heard anything from Matt and Laura, friends of the show, recently. I might have to check in and make sure they're still listening.
Ex-friends of the show. Anyway, that's it, Hearst. I can tell you it's very close. We have more than 50, Hearst.
Yes.
And you've got 25 of them.
So which means you've got 26, yes, or 27,
I've got 27
or 28.
So I have won that episode. Hooray.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And would you like a quick reminder, because of Men in Black Ray thing, about the top five evil movie villain schemes or whatever order those words
go? Go on then, hit me with it.
At number five, Jigsaw from the Saw movie. At number four, Simon Gruber from Die Hard 3. At number three, The Rich People from Star. At number two, Ozymandias from Watchmen. And at number one, Baron Zemo from the MCU, but really mostly Civil War. There we go, it's official.
Yeah, listening to them again, I'm really surprised that you won that one, because those were some pretty niche movie villains in there.
I think we have some pretty niche people who listen in.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We love our niche.
We do, especially our mouth.
Yeah, never change, guys.
Yeah, never change. But that was in the past, huh? Should we move forward into some operatic rock?
Yeah, let's do it.
First, before we can start discussing Meatloaf, we have to find out who gets to discuss Meatloaf first. Do you remember how we do that?
I do. Let's flip that coin of destiny.
I have it right here. Heads for her, squirrels have tails. Clean one, and squirrels have tails.
Ooh, very good. It's your turn again.
My number five is from 1984, Hearst, and it is the song Modern Girl from the album Bad Attitude. It's the one that goes, give me the future with a modern girl. You know that one?
No.
Because, Steve, you listen to them all.
I know, I'll explain all that in a minute. Oh, we should have probably, before you started, we should have probably gone through my preamble because I just assumed I was going first.
We'll do it now.
I think, because sometimes we talk about the topic before we just dive in, don't we?
Sometimes. You do, clearly. I don't. I was too excited to talk about Meatloaf. Yeah.
So we should probably talk a little bit about Meatloaf because obviously I've had some fairly rage-inducing experiences over the time we've been here. See, a couple of weeks ago, the Fast and the Furious, Spice Girls, ABBA. People seem to quite like the rage. But then there's also been some things that I love, like the TV themes, cartoon villains, just stuff that I'm really into. This week, we have stumbled upon the thing that it turns out perhaps I'm most ambivalent to in the world.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. For me, Meatloaf songs are kind of the white paint of music. Inoffensive, but dulled, so I really have no strong feelings about it.
Are you sure you're listening to the right Meatloaf?
Well, we'll find out in a minute. The problem is he's recorded 1,000 songs. They're all 20 minutes long. So there's no point in listening to them all because, frankly, even a best of compilation, I struggled to notice when one had finished and the next one had started.
You can't see it, but Squirrel is sitting with his mouth open at this point.
So as a challenge, it was kind of akin to choosing my top 5 square feet of grass in the garden. Eventually, I just shortlisted the top 10 most listened to on Spotify and diligently tried to tell them apart. So at least this way, if I win, the public resource that is Top 5 Face Off remains credible.
Hello at top5faceoff.co.uk if you happen to disagree with us here, everybody. Good Lord.
Some people may love him. I mean, it's just kind of the same rock and roll song happening over and over again for just ages. Just figuring out how am I supposed to rank these things when they all occupy the exact same part of my brain.
Goodness.
Squirrel and Hurst argue about this for another 6 minutes.
Like, Soundgarden have got way more range. And they wrote their own songs. I mean, Meatloaf just stymied and goes, here you go. Here's another one, Meat. And he goes, right, yeah. How should I sing it? Same as before? Like, yep, exactly the same.
Of course, because you're one of the best. Okay, let's go. Number 5. The Meatloaf song for me is from the album Bad Attitude that came out in 1984. It is Modern Girl. This one.
But that was once upon a time. Now it's a brand new world. Give me the future. Give me the future. Give me the future with my modern girl. Give me the future.
Yeah, that one might be on my list. I don't know for sure.
Oh, exciting. What do you mean you don't? Oh, God.
So, sounds like it might be hard to tell. So, yes, carry on.
Spent 11 weeks in the UK top 40, reached number 17 in his peak, and in the US it had a different title, which was Give Me the Future with a Modern Girl. It's far too long. Just called a Modern Girl. Maybe Ohio needs the chorus explained in advance. It's a great song. It's very fast. It is 4.5 minutes long, less than. And it is, just a good little rock song. Meatloaf sings stuff, especially his more operatic stuff, which is by Jim Steinman. This one was Jim Stein. This was Paul Jacobs and Sarah Durkee. But he will sing about teenage angst in a way that is so fucking dramatic. It's like you're watching a divorce proceeding that is for some reason taking place in Wembley Stadium and they're just singing at each other to try and work out their differences. And this one's less of that. This is a more standard rock pop song, but it's still a good one. I won't go on about it too long. It's only my number 5. My number 5 is Modern Girl.
What I assume that they're doing as a partnership, the Meatloaf song generator. What I've noticed is that it's random, disconnected introductions that probably go on too long, insane melodramatic declarations of love, and then repeat the title of the song as much as you possibly can. And you've got yourself a Meatloaf song. So for me, my number 5 was You Took the Words Right Out of My Mouth, Hot Summer Night, 1977. Written by Jim Steinman, as so many of the big hits were.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses?
Yes.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
Minutes and 5 seconds, so almost under 5 minutes, which for Meatloaf is fantastic work. Well, for Steinman is fantastic work. Meatloaf just did what he was told, did it well, but yeah, just did it. Opens with one of Rock's most recognisable spoken word intros, before launching into one of the standout tracks from Bat Out of Hell. Weird as all shit, hated it at first, but then it amused me, and now I kind of like it. I did have to listen through those 10 I shortlisted a few times just to try and, you know, really put it out. I mean, I've done it properly. I may find it all very generic and, and inspiring, but I'm trying to do it right for the resource. Yeah, this one I felt fit the bill, got listened to a lot. Yeah, it's all right. So what I'm doing for my little gimmick this week is, as I mentioned in my song generator, they do like to have him sing the title of the song, even if it's a long song, like "You took the words right out of my mouth." How many times do you think he sings "You took the words right out of my mouth" in that song? I think it's 5 minutes and 5 seconds.
Yes. At the end of the song, there's a whole bit where it's just that repeated over and over. So it's going to be a lot. I'm going to say 35. Doesn't make sense. 36.
Wow, you really have been desensitized to me. Like, no, it's 20, which is an extraordinary amount of thing for 5 minutes. 35, that would have been pretty much the whole song.
You think?
It was kind of all. I mean, bear in mind that the last 2 minutes was "You took the words right out of my mouth," pretty much, and... yeah, that's 20 times the title.
So, 20 times sounds not terrible.
It's exhausting. Each song could be at least a minute short if they didn't feel the need to repeat the title and pronounce it near the end.
That's called a chorus.
Yeah, it's called a chorus when it's in the song. When it's at the end of the song, and you're just doing it over and over and over again. It's just kind of lazy songwriting.
Just out of interest, mate, Black Hole Sun, 31 times.
All right, how about all of the others?
I just picked the best one. So that was number five.
This is the game. 20 titles at the end of it. You made it sound boring now, so thanks for that.
Well, it depends what the future numbers hold. Let's move on to my number four, Hurst, which was Dead Ringer for Love. Ooh. In 1981 and came off the album Dead Ringer. And this is the first in my list written by Jim Steinman, who, as Hertz rightly points out, had quite a long and, let's say, pretty successful writing partnership with, I think his friends call him Meat. Dead Ringer was a duet with Cher and hung around in the UK charts for 17 weeks. It peaked at number 5 in February 82, even though it was released in November 81. Charts were a different world back then. Side note, did you know that's currently number 1 right now has been the longest number 1 that's ever been? I couldn't tell you a single goddamn... I have no idea what it sounds like or what it is or who it's by even.
No, me either.
Weird, isn't it?
So it's
no one gives
like
a shit about the charts
Brian
anymore.
Adams.
yeah, exactly. Or was it Wet that was longest?
I think it was Brad Adams.
I think they both had a go. Whichever one came last, right, was their current record holder. But yeah, no one gives a shit about the charts anymore, but they were definitely different in the early 80s, man. Songs don't go up for 17 weeks. But
because you had to go out and buy them. It wasn't how many times you played them, was it? It was how many physical copies that you were sold.
Yeah. So this is obviously a very successful duet. If you're going to put someone up against Meatloaf, you choose fucking Cher.
You've been trying to look away, but now you're finally got the poise.
Yeah. meet him halfway, and his halfway is still fucking mountain high because it's ridiculous. And she does really well because she's fucking shit. She, you know, doesn't just cope with the performance, she gives as much back as he throws at her, and it's really good bouncing backwards and forwards songs. And some Steinman songs, you rightly point out, sound a lot like musical numbers, but this one just sounds like a musical argument, and I like it a lot. So yeah, Dead Ringer, it's the exciting bit of a lot of Meatloaf songs are about relationships, and this is the exciting bit of relationships, and then discovering the irritating acts each other have. Now, number four, Dead Ringer for Love.
Oh, yeah, that was all right as well. Sounded a lot like the others. My number four.
He had fucking Cherry.
Yeah.
He had a whole other singer.
Every now and then he had another singer in to, you know, do a female part and let them sing for a couple of minutes. Not enough to get in the way of the meatloafiness of it.
Mm.
Anyway, my number four is the only one I've got that isn't a Steinman song, actually.
Oh.
This one was written by Richard O'Brien for the Rocky Horror Picture Show, where Meatloaf played Eddie the Biker, and it's Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul. It's only 3 minutes and 3 seconds, which I loved about it because it felt like the right amount of time for a song that, you know, didn't really go anywhere, but it was kind of driving and it was good fun. Yes, I do love Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Because you're a functioning human being. If you don't like it, I don't know what to do.
How many times does he sing Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul in 3 minutes? Well,
this one again, it ends with that just repeated over and over.
This is a theme. It ends with that repeated over and over.
A theme, but again, I think it's just a theme of songs from that era because this was written by a completely different person.
I disagree, because why would I have noticed it so much whilst listening to these if every song did the same thing?
All right. Going to be a few, but I don't think as many. The last one was 20, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a 5-minute song, so yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to go 14.
Very close. 16 times.
Ooh.
That is pretty good. That's
a good one.
It's pretty impressive. But yeah, it was all right. I didn't mind it at all.
All right. Excellent. And that was your number four.
That's my number four.
I was speaking with Pete, who chose the movie Villain Schemes, and I mentioned we were doing Meatloaf next, and he goes, "Oh, I hope you include Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul." And I say, "Well, I cannot, because it wasn't on any of Meatloaf's studio albums."
It just said Meatloaf songs.
Do we always studio albums? We literally said it in the last episode.
Well, I don't care. I was going on Meatloaf songs.
God damn. My number three is, the previously mentioned Took the Words Right Out of My Mouth first. It is a freaking banger from the Bat Out of Hell albums you mentioned. Single came out in the same year we did, Hurst. God damn, that's a long time ago.
Oh, he gave me his jaws.
Yes.
I love that dude. Yes.
That dude being Jim Stone.
Heroic.
He did the spoken word bit along with a actress called Marcia McLean. As you mentioned, Hurst, this song is shorter than Steinman's normal songs because Meatloaf specifically asked him to write a short pop song. And short pop song is 5 minutes and 20 seconds or whatever it is he said. So there we are. But it is still unmistakably Steinman. He's taken like a really simple idea for, again, an old man singing about teenagers being in love. Well, he wasn't old at the time, I guess, but he continued to do so until he was. And treating it like, I don't know, some form of Greek tragedy or something. But it's fun, it's jolly. The chorus is, like you said, anyone can join in with it straight away because it's just repeated over and over again. And the strange spoken bit at the beginning is weird and was often removed for radio play, as you might imagine, but I don't know, I like it because it's just so freaking weird.
It is so weird, and as I say, first time I hated it and then it kind of grew on me a bit, and now actually I quite like it, mostly because of Steinman just going, yes.
Would you offer your throat? Would you offer your throat to the was it Wolf at Moonlight?
Yeah, and the Red Rose or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolute bollocks, but it's,
yeah,
it's just.
And then the guitar. Oh, God.
But it is part of that classic Meatloaf song generator, isn't it? Like generic, weird intro, changing rhythm, changing, and finished with Opal over and over and over again. And it's a great formula. He said it's the funny thing about he wanted a short pop song.
Yes, and it was 5 and 25.
When I was looking for my facts versus estimated facts, one that I chose not to go with in the end was the average length of a UK top 40 hit across modern chart history is 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Okay.
The average song length for Meatloaf is 5 minutes and 3 seconds. So it's a whole 50% longer.
Value for money.
Yeah. Well played, Steinman. Stick to your guns. You do you, Duck.
We certainly did. So yeah, my number three, same as your number five. What you got at number three, Hers?
Well, this one actually was probably my favourite. And this is a sign that I was trying to look at it objectively for the list, because, I mean, when I hate something, it's easy to be passionate either way. But as I've said, I'm sitting in that middle zone and I don't really care. But felt like whilst I did like this one best, maybe it wasn't his version of it that I liked best. And it's 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad.
Oh.
1977, written by Jim Steinman, but obviously famously covered later on by Rod Stewart.
Was it? I had no idea.
Yeah, but I do like the song. Apparently it was inspired by a song that Elvis had written. Steinman had listened to it, and it was something about wanting and needing, and it's like, oh yeah, that's great. But yeah, it was released as the final single from Bat Out of Hell and became his breakthrough hit in the US. And it's a great song, and perhaps one of the reasons I enjoyed it personally, looking at it from a Hurst eye rather than a which is the best Meatloaf song eye. How many times do you think he sings the title?
You probably just saw that face I was doing thinking. What is it? What is the official title of that song? Is it just...
The official 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad.
Okay, not many, because it's only right at the end of the chorus. Maybe we're talking like 5 or 6. I'm going to go with 6.
I should have gone with 5, mate.
Ah, fuck!
yeah, only 5 times, because it is part of the chorus, but it doesn't go out from it.
It wouldn't make sense if you just said it was Andrea, so yeah.
Yeah, so it's actually a really nice song. I liked it a lot, but I think putting into account like the epicness and the success and all the other things around Meatloaf, I needed to be a bit more objective this time rather than just going in full of bile. Yeah. I thought, no, I can't just go and hate everything that I don't love. I've got to be honest, and this one didn't really set off either side. But yeah, I like that. 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad. It is a good song. It's 5 minutes 26 still. It's more typical song.
Well mentioned today as well. I think we'd call that one a ballad, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I'd say it's a ballad.
Cool. My number two for me was Midnight at the Lost and Found. Silver bullets in the jukebox. Lost and Found, which came out in 1983. And as Hurst mentioned earlier, Meatloaf hasn't written any of his own songs, and this was by Meatloaf. So there we are. It got to number 7 in the UK. And it was made during a period that Meatloaf and Steinman had split apart. The Meat wrote this one himself, and it clocked in a teeny tiny... What did you say the perfect length for a number one chart record was?
It's 3 minutes 30 seconds, roughly.
Oh, he's missed it by 1 second. 3:29, Midnight at the Lost and Found. It is just a very, very catchy rock song. I would imagine if it was being sung by anyone else and you didn't want to be terrified trying to emulate them, it would be a very good karaoke song, because it's a very simple song. It's fast moving. It's got excellent rhythm. I like Midnight at the Lost and Found a lot, and that is why it snuck in at my number 2. He did this
instead of Total Eclipse of the Heart. What?
That was perhaps a mistake. Perhaps something to do with the fact that Stanley had written Total Eclipse, so they were having a bit of a fallout. But he could have, yeah. He could have got in there with Bonnie Tyler.
But well, he did cover that later, didn't he? Or was it?
Air Supply did it.
I like it. No, I was thinking of Celine Dion, aren't I? It's all coming back to me.
Oh, it's all coming back to me now. Oh, yeah, of course.
So that's
course.
Celine Dion, yes. cover that he did of her rather than Stuart covering it out of the Empire. I need to check that's right now, and I've got my rock singers on it.
Doesn't try and be like Bow of Hell or any of the other kind of songs from the Simon era. It's very much of the time the rock music that was in the chart, and it's just great. Midnight at the Lost and Found. And it's what taught me that silver bullets were slang terms for a quarter.
Right. My number two is 12 minutes and 1 second long. I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that.
Yes.
But I won't do that as in brackets for the purposes of our little game at the end. And also,
ooh, okay, yeah.
The title is I'd do anything for love, but he sings I would do anything for love. So I'm correct. Including that as well. So just otherwise the game's kind of ruined.
Right.
So it's only UK number one single.
Yep.
And his biggest worldwide hit album version runs, as I've said, over 12 minutes. It is long. It's another Steinman classic. It's another one with a weird intro. The first 30 seconds sounds like someone trying to sound like a motorbike by using an electric guitar. And then in comes the piano, and several times when he should start the song, he just carries on with the piano for a bit more. And then it's like, this time, no. And a bit more piano. It's about nearly 2 minutes before he actually sings
it. Yeah, easily, actually.
And throughout the song, in fact, throughout several of them, I found there were points where it's like, it's coming to a natural ending, this is perfect. And then it just picks it up and goes, carry on, no, I'm not ready yet. It's like playing an encore, but throughout every song. Anyway, it's an all right song. I didn't mind it when it came out. I mean, it was number one for an awful long time. Not quite Wet and Braddams, but it was there for a long time. And considering it is a very long song, but then so was Braddams, wasn't it? It's was like a 5 minute
song. The single version was 3 minutes and 40 seconds.
What was it now? It was in 5 minutes.
The one they played, they're never going to play a 12 minute song on the radio, right?
No, that's true. But I'm sure that even a short one was.
Well, it was short, for sure.
The short one was 5 minutes and 16 seconds.
There you go.
So not a short one, but it did include less weirdness at the beginning, less piano intro, and then when the woman sung, obviously he had to cut out half of anything she sang because she was obviously intruding into his singing, which he doesn't like very much.
What about? He has duets with women like all the time.
Yeah, I mean, for the ones that were popular that I bothered to listen to. That's how I was listening whilst I was arting, and I got to a point where I was like, is this the same song that I'm listening to? And I had to go and check if it had moved on, and it had moved on to another song. So I felt like I would literally have to sit there and listen to the whole thing and make notes of when each thing finished. And I thought, there's no way I'm doing that. It's just too much meatloaf. So when you go to the Dulux place and you're looking for which white you're going to get, and you're like, oh, bleached ghost, that looks all right. Summer chalk, that's nice.
Spring sort of cozy.
Yeah, absence of saturation, that's a nice white, that one.
They're all FFF on the fucking hex scale. They're all the exact same.
They're all white, but they've just got fancy names. And that was kind of how I felt about the whole thing. Like, pick one. So anyway, my number two is I'd Do Anything for Love. in brackets, but I won't do that. But how many times does he sing that in 12 minutes?
Does he have to say, but I won't do that, or do we take the bracket bit away?
We take the bracket bit away. If it's in brackets, it doesn't really count.
Okay, so it's how many times does he say, I would do anything for love, or I'd do, or whatever. He's got a lot of opportunity to say it, but I don't think he says it as often as some of his more poppy songs. His ballads, he seems to say it less, but it's going to be a lot. 14, random number.
29 times. he does hammer it home, but again, it is a 12-minute title. So to me, that's less impressive than the 16 times he did the whole 2D Blessed song.
We should do a per minute version.
I got a bit. bored of myself at that point, so it didn't make very interesting reading because they were all fairly similar.
Alright, well there we are, and we have reached the worst host. I want to go first. I keep forgetting because it's so often you. There was a period, Hurst, at the end of the 80s where they were trying to use all the new modern fancy synthesizer shit in what felt like every song in the late 80s. My worst is from 86. It's called A Man and a Woman, and it's from the album Blind Before I Stop. Wasn't released as a UK single, and that's a fucking blessing as far as anyone should be aware. It's not very good. It's got like a very synthesized electronic, almost Caribbean drum beat throughout the whole thing, and it's just boring. It was written by someone called Frank Farian and recorded in Germany, weirdly, I've got in my notes, and the female vocalist, you know, the one that chops so often on the Meatloaf drums, that was Amy Goff, which is a G-O-F-F, pretty German-sounding name. And, yeah, it's got, like, keyboards and Euro fucking electronic production and any of the I'm going to say it because I'm going to say it. The usual distinctiveness that Meatloaf has that separates him from everybody else and makes it very obvious that this is a Meatloaf song and this is a song by someone who isn't Meatloaf is pretty much just lost with like generic crappy guitar work, and it's not spectacularly disastrous, it's just fucking anonymous. And like I said earlier, a Meatloaf song should sound like you are watching a fucking divorce proceeding in Wembley Stadium, and this sounds like someone announcing that the restaurant is going to close short as a song. Yeah, didn't like it, rubbish. A Man and a Woman, you can hear it in the background, and I apologize for that. You can't hear it, as the people are.
No, I was just leaving a gap for the people to enjoy it.
Well, no, they won't enjoy it. It's terrible.
To not enjoy it. Sorry, guys, I've got another one for you that you can listen to that's equally.
But it's, at least it's 10 best inspiring. Songs, so it's going to be fucking fantastic.
Well, no, because I did then research into what is Meatloaf's worst song, and I took a bit of a straw poll from that, from what people thought, and then I listened to those as well.
Do people think is his worst? I bet A Man and a Woman doesn't do bad in that.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Oh.
It's right up there. But it's not the one I chose.
Oh, okay.
I chose 2003's You're Right, I Was Wrong.
Should've listened when you said I'd miss you. Should've listened, but I could not hear. You said I'd want you back.
It's 3 minutes, 44 seconds, just to chuck into a real generic timestamp as well. And this one was written by Diane Warren, who is obviously not an Epstein. obviously not a Steinman.
Well, she's famous, right?
Yeah, considering, I mean, it's the same long repetitive stuff, only the hyperbole and declarations are so bland and uninspiring as to render the whole song pointless. We're talking his declarations of love so far have been, I'll never forgive myself if we don't go all the way tonight. I'd run right into hell and back for you. I'd sell my soul for you. I would not do that for anyone. Love Carly, but no, I'm not selling my soul.
Yeah.
I need that. I'm not going into hell because, you know, you're assuming you can get back, but it's famously difficult to get out. So, but I mean, this is the level that Steinman and Meat were working at. It's like, grand, I love you so much that I can't even explain it. Whereas this one, you're right, I was wrong. That's your big declaration, is it? That sounds like the most reluctant love song in history. But the thing is, Diane Warren is one of the most successful pop songwriters ever. So she wrote Because You Love Me, and it's Celine Dion, and Break My Heart by Tony Bennett. How Do I Live, Leanne Rimes, and I'd Lie For You.
Why, that's Meat the Loaf. Number two, that one got you.
So she is capable of hitting that meatloaf sweet spot. But yeah, just a swing and a miss from everyone. Dull performance, dull song, just
there. As you can hear in the background.
You're right, I was wrong. Like the words that almost never get said anyway.
Well, maybe that's why it deserves
especially not on the internet.
The internet doesn't understand what that means. Enough about the worst hearse, let's talk about the first hearse. This comes as no surprise to anyone that knows me, but the number one Meatloaf song and very high up on the list of best songs ever goddamn written was, unsurprisingly, by Jim Steinman. It is Paradise by the Dashboard Light, and it is incredible. Story of an entire relationship in a mere mumble minutes. And it's about 8.5 minutes. And it stayed at number one in the Netherlands for 23 weeks. They fucking loved it over there. But this was Meatloaf duetting with Ellen Foley. She was the singer. She wasn't in the video. But this is the song about a young, again, teenage couple getting together. Meatloaf persuades her to let him bang her. He swears that he's going to love each other till the end of time, and then they just shout at each other about wishing the end of time could come a little bit quicker so we can end our time with you. Oh, Lord, I love this song so much. I remember playing it for my child when he was fairly young, and we were driving somewhere in the car, and it kind of got to the end. I was like, what did you think? And he was like, it was like five different songs and all of them were good. And I'm like, yes, that is exactly what it is. It is excellent. Fortunately, I'm not sure he was old enough to understand what was going on in some bits of the song. But yeah, and obviously it has baseball commentary in the middle as an allegory for the sexy. And yeah, and lifelong commitment and immediate buyer's remorse. It is somehow not depressing, though. It is such a fun song. It's great to sing. It's one of the good ones to sing at karaoke if you've got somebody else that knows the words that is going to do the girl part. And I'm normally the one that does the girl part. Only because I know the words. And it is ridiculous in fucking scale and ambition for such a non-story. Again, it's just fucking Meatloaf and Steinman up the wazoo, and it's just glorious. And it warns us why we should think before we make promises we might not want to keep.
Yeah.
That is my number one, Paradise by the Dashboard Light. From the album Bat Out of Hell. Came out in 78 again, same as we did. And it's just...
There we go.
What do you like? Fact and estimated fact first.
You know what? I think I would.
Fact. Meatloaf had an affair with Alan Foley shortly after recording this song. Or fact. The bass commentary was by the New York Yankees commentary man Phil Rizzuto, but he claims to have not realised it was a sexual metaphor.
I think the second one.
You are entirely correct, Hurst. He did indeed claim that. Meatloaf said that's bollocks. He was fully aware of what he was doing and why he was doing it. And when you listen to what he's saying...
If he didn't, it's on him.
Maybe. But there you are. Oh, God, I love that song. And I'm just going to keep talking for a little while longer so that people at home can hear more of it. There you go. That's it. We're done. What about you, Hurst?
My number one song is probably unsurprising given the way I've approached this and the objective, what is the meatloafiest song of all the songs? And it's the one that they used as the title of the musical they made to backfill all the musical songs that they'd written. And it's Bat Out of Hell from 1977, writer Jim Steinman, of course. Seconds, of course, a 2-minute intro.
Again, yeah. Motorbikes, guitars.
It's a winning formula, I suppose. If you find a money tree, just keep shaking it. So it's his signature song, and in spite of being 10 minutes long, it still became one of the defining rock songs of the 70s. It's good. I probably won't listen to it again for a while, but if it came on, I wouldn't necessarily skip it. Maybe after like 5 minutes, I'll be like, right, yeah, that'll be. But it's an all right song. It's definitely pale leg sharp.
Oh, in the pink color. I get it.
How many times does he say or sing Bat Out of Hell in that 10 minutes?
I
said 10 minutes, 8 minutes, because 2 minutes is intro.
It was quite out last time, because again, I think this one's a very wordy song. But I don't think he says it as often as you might think. At the end, he does do the lug-a-da-da-da-hell bit over and over again. What was anything below? It's
29.
No, it's not. It's like 13.
Oh. Once again, within one.
Oh, come on. 14.
No, 12.
They're both.
Mulligan missed. Yeah, 12 times title. It's just classic Meatloaf. I may find myself at some point in the future in the mood for the genericness of it, and I would, as I say, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. I would listen to anyway because I like the song, and
it's a good song.
And you took the words right out of my mouth. I would probably listen to just so I could hear the beginning and smile to myself. I wouldn't say I'm a convert, but I have more knowledge about Meatloaf than I did have before.
Well, isn't that just what we want to impart upon the world anyway, as we are here to inform and entertain, and if we can achieve one of those things, we've done okay.
Yeah. Would you like a fact and an estimated fact about Meatloaf?
About just Meatloaf? Yes, I would.
Yes. Fact. During a concert, Prince collapsed after an electric shock from a faulty guitar. Meatloaf said he rushed over to help him, and in the confusion, accidentally stepped on it.
I hope so.
Fact. Whilst filming Rocky Horror Picture Show, Meatloaf was introduced to pork scratchings by Richard O'Brien and reportedly ordered 2 kilos of them so he could snack on them throughout the rest of filming.
Oh, because it was filmed in the UK. And as we know, I believe they are the number one UK business?
I can't remember.
So they're absolutely the most British things. Like, what you got there? How's some pigskin?
Oh, I kind of want them both to be true. What excellent things. But let's just fingers crossed that he stepped on Prince, because that's hilarious.
He did. In fact, during a concert, Prince collapsed after an electric shock from a faulty guitar. And a DJ rushed over to help him in the confusion he accidentally stepped on.
And Meatloaf is not a little dude.
He is not an inconsiderable man.
Oh, yeah, good fact.
There we go. We both got that, right?
Yeah, we did. We're good at our facts, and we're good at ranking Meatloaf songs because we're already done.
Right.
Well, there we are. We're at the end.
We are at the end. I suppose all that's left is, obviously, we've got to pick what's on the next episode. We must be near the last episode of this season, mustn't we?
Two more to go after this one.
There we go.
Next episode will be the penultimate one.
Let's find out what that's going to be. Or should we do our call-outs first? I can't remember.
We do the wheel first.
Yeah.
First, do you see the wheel?
I can see the wheel. Actually, you've done pretty well there.
All right. I will keep very still. And for those of you at home that don't know what the fuck's going on, I'm holding my webcam in front of my monitor so Hurst can see the wheel. Well, let's hope you get one that you are looking forward to. Fictional Malks. Malk chose that one. Shocker. Top five brown things. Top five sports mascots. And fucking Jesus. All right, let's go.
All right.
Oh. Movie opening sequences.
Oh, blimey.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's quite good because you only have to watch maybe 5 or 10 minutes of each movie to judge it.
Well, I think you're probably about right, right? Or do we say until the title comes up?
Because recently, like modern times, sometimes the title doesn't come always up come up.
Well, they don't get to count then.
I think it's one of those things. We go back to harp on about big man action movies. You just know what the sequence is.
You know what the opening scene, the opening sequence. Yeah, that feels right. Some will end at the title card. Some of the title card will come before, but it will just be the first bit of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. We have to think of the top five. I mean, I already know my number one, so that's easy. But the rest. Let's find out. Well, let me have a quick peep at who suggested that one for us. Oh, Meatloaf Songs was Cov.
Ah.
Probably have mentioned that.
Bit of a vote for you then, out of pure rage for my disdain, I'd have thought.
Probably. Movie opening sequences was suggested by Hurst, I have written here. So, good suggestion, Hurst.
Oh, thanks. I don't remember. I mean,
this could have been a year ago, rather. So, yes, that one was suggested by Hurst. Thank you, Hurst. Yes. Today's topic, Meatloaf, was suggested by Kovac, number one Kovac. So, thank you very much, Kovac. I hope one of us did a good job.
We both did a good job.
Yeah, but only one of us will have done the correct job. No.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, not much left to tell you, rankers, other than you can find us on the internets by just typing Top 5 Face Off into the Google, and it will spit out all sorts of things that you can do. But do come to our website. Top5faceoff.co.uk and vote for our winner. That's
do
the most
not
important thing.
Forget to vote. And also, do not forget to tell a friend and get them to vote.
And don't just vote for Hurst because he's sad. That's not
how
this works.
Let's get these things right. I say I'm trying to be objective with this one.
Yes. And absolutely, if you enjoyed yourself, tell a friend or a member of your family about how great Top 5 Face Off is. And if you didn't enjoy it, just be quiet and contemplate your mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, come on, Rankers. Get a friend involved. Let's get over 100 votes for one episode before the end of the season.
We've only got 2 more episodes before the end of the season. All right.
Which means that everyone can get one person. Everyone who votes can get one other person to vote. And we're doubled down. Like, or everyone who listens votes.
Yeah, well, that would smash out the bar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just think, if you haven't voted, think, this will be the time I'll go to top5faceoff.co.uk. It's right there on the homepage. Just click, vote for Squirrel or vote for Hurst.
That'd be mad.
There you go. What else do we talk about, Hurst?
If you want to support us financially, there are two ways. Obviously, you can buy arts from me. That helps me more than it does Squirrel.
A little bit more.
You can also be a Patreon. The tiny sum of £1. Although that's a limited number offer.
There's like two left.
Two left at a pound, get on that. And then after that, £2 is entry level. Or if you want to be a Bertie Big Bollocks, then go the full £5 and become a number one ranker.
And then you will get to hear your name not often like this, but this time it's like this.
go. Thank you very much for listening and for voting and just for the love.
Thanks for the love, Rankers.
We'll see you next time for movie intro sequences.
Movie intro sequences. Please rewind this podcast for the next people that want to listen. And we will see you next time for movie intro sequences.
Fuck it. Wind it up. We're done.
We'll see you later, Rankers. Love you.
Top 5 Face-Off is presented by Matt Hurst and Matt Squirrel and produced by Powerstorm Awesome Fire Incorporated. For more details and to vote for a winner, visit top5faceoff.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
Off. This guy did have some particularly good sized rocks. And
did he? What good sized rocks you have, sir?
Enough about the worst, Hurst.
Well, yeah, it doesn't make sense, though, because then I.
Let's talk about the first Hurst.
Oh, that yeah, works. That could have been it. Oh, there we are. Stand by for that at the end, everybody. Someone at the door, Hers?
No, the dogs have just been dicks.
Here's a song called Midnight and the Lost and Found from The Coin of Destiny.
That's just landed
onto my deck.
That was the biggest flip ever.
Please hold.
And it's Squirrel. We were right. Phew.
Yeah. All right. Go back on there and stay there. Don't fall off because I don't want to lose you. All right. Okay. What the fuck was I saying before I so rudely interrupted by the Coin of Destiny?
Now the Malcolms can put their little pocketbooks away and not have to send in their Rod Stewart. Like, no, I can't
just
thing.
Leave that entire 3 minute of us searching the internet section in.
Yeah. All right, then let the Malcolms write in. Let them have their fun.
All right.
Except for the ones who listen through the beeps at the end. They can find out.
And then you will get to hear your name not often like this, but this time it's like this. Insert song.
Yeah.
9 hours later. Continue. Top 5 Face Off.